The Fan on Demand. Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. This week, it's all about the big PlayStation 4 announcement. We brought in a special guest to help us dissect what was and was not shown off. And we have reviews of Crysis 3 and Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Have you got game? The Lowdown.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sony PlayStation 4 edition. I'm Omen Qureshi, Christine Chubb with me as always. Brian Calhoun, not here right now, but he will be here for segment 3 to review Crysis 3 as well as Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. He had some other stuff to do, so he couldn't join us for the first two segments. So that's why we called in off the bench Mr. Rob Keys, editor-in-chief of GameRant.com, also better known as the super handsome... Can we decide? Is it super handsome robot or is it super sexy robot? We need to
It's not up to me.
A decision. Or does it just depend on what day it is? I think it depends on the person.
All right.
You can call me the next gen Brian Calhoun if you want going forward.
Nobody ever wants that title. You should never aspire to have that title. That's terrible.
All right, let's go back to the sexy robot.
The reason we brought you in, Keys, is because you were actually in New York for the big PlayStation 4 event.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get to that in a minute. But just kind of to ease us into the show, I didn't think that you could do something cooler than actually be down at the PlayStation 4 launch in New York, or the unveil, I guess, or the... It wasn't even unveil. It was like the announcement.
Yeah.
But you did something even cooler.
I did.
The day after. So you got to fill us in, because you told me in the walk from the garage up here, and my head almost exploded.
So as soon as we found out that Sony was going to host this big PlayStation event in New York, I made sure that I had enough time on day two that I could do something on my bucket list and complete a little fanboy dream of mine. So I contacted one of my buddies, Ryan Panagos at Marvel, and said, dude, we have to go out for lunch and you have to give me a tour of Marvel headquarters where all the magic happens.
I can't believe it.
And we did. And it was pretty special for me, as something that defined, like the X-Men cartoon as a kid and the comics defined who I am today. And I got to meet those people in real life. It was pretty special.
So what was that like?
It was incredible. I got to see a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. I got to see the process of how they make these comics and how that, you know, relates into the TV shows and movies. And I got to see a lot of the online people and the creative team. It was just very cool all around, but they were also very secretive about a lot of stuff that I wanted to find out about.
Yeah, like they wouldn't even let you take pictures of anything, right?
No, for a lot of legal and security reasons, they can't take a lot of pictures inside. I couldn't even take a picture of the logo, like by the elevator, but I managed to get a cool photo inside with one of the props, an actual like giant metal hammer of Thor, the ultimate Thor hammer. And it was massive.
I saw you post it. I was like, ah.
And I got one other picture. They have, of course, there's art everywhere. There's posters and all this beautiful art from the 80s till now, even before that. And one wall, they have like this huge collage of all these characters. And I got a picture in front of that too, with some of my favorite characters. Oh. So pretty cool stuff. So
that's one off the list. Now you got to go to DC headquarters and then call it even.
Yeah. Yep.
That's pretty sweet. The big news this week, I don't know if people who listen to the show are aware, but Sony went out and announced that they're going to make a PlayStation 4. We actually have a clip here of Andrew House, who's the president of Sony, making the announcement official.
Expect worlds to come alive with greater fidelity and intensity than ever before. Expect the best franchises to be even better. And expect powerful opportunities to connect and play and stay informed even when away from the primary console. This is the foundation of our next generation platform, PlayStation 4.
And with that, there it was. The PlayStation 4 was out, unveiled to everybody now. What I thought was the most interesting about the event, and I guess from a perspective of hosting this show, it was great, is that it was only about video games.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't really a lot about third-party stuff or, you know, apps that you can get or their integration with different things. They didn't talk about whether it could play Blu-rays anymore,
yeah,
whether it would even have discs. Of course, the big thing that a lot of people were talking about was the fact that we didn't even get to see the actual machine.
That's right.
They just showed us what it can do, which, I mean, I guess doesn't really matter. It's not really a big deal. Who cares what the machine actually looks like?
You're kind of curious.
You're curious, definitely. Yeah. And I think the only real kind of big thing would be if it turns out to be like cinder block sized and it takes up all the time, a room on your table, then that's a problem.
It is your table.
Yeah, exactly. It is your table. But they didn't talk about third party stuff and they only talked about gaming stuff, which is great for what we do because that's what we wanted to see. But I found that a little curious though.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you there. I think everybody kind of expected to see it. I mean, we did get to see what the new what the new controller looked like, and it was really similar to the images that everybody had seen before. I wanted them to talk a little bit more about this touchscreen that's on it, because I want to see how it's actually going to work with the games, but I guess that's, I mean, there's so many more events coming up that they're going to announce things for, so, I mean, this is only the tip of the iceberg that we're going to see. You know, I'm sure they'll announce more at PAX, they'll announce more at E3, you know, and then,
yeah.
I mean, the big shock to me was that it's coming out this year.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, that's a big thing for me. But Moment, that's a good point. I think for a 2-hour presentation, the fact that they were able to focus on a lot of theoretical stuff, and this is sort of like the tip of the iceberg, because like Christine was saying, they have so much to show at E3 and at Gamescom and even maybe the Game Developers Conference next month. Mm-hmm. But the theme of the whole thing was games, not only for the presentation, but of the hardware themselves. And right out the gate, they said the PS4 is not designed to be a thing for your living room. It's designed for the gamer specifically. And a lot of what they showed, even though I'm scared some of it may not be ready for launch when it comes out this fall, the potential is there to do something very special for like gamers, like hardcore gamers.
Yeah, which I love. Now let's... Before they what they actually did was, it felt like E3 in a sense that they kept bringing out developer after developer after developer, showing off games and projects they're working on, and these were like the top production companies out there showing off what they're making for the PS4, which obviously lets you know that they've known about this thing for, you got to figure, at least a year, maybe two.
Well, I mean, right away they said they've been working on this since 2008. I mean,
yeah,
that's a huge amount of time to be thinking about this, so that's a lot of time to tell developers.
And getting developers involved, because the big point of it was saying, look, we actually went to the developer and said, what do you want this console to do? Mm-hmm. How can we make this work for you? Because, you know, everyone knows the PS3, it's infamous that its architecture was very non-developer friendly, and it made it a real pain for people, for the big developers and publishers who make multi-platform games, to develop for the PS3. And with that, they chose an architecture and GPU that is super easy to port games over to PC, and it's going to make a big change for anyone interested in developing PS4 games, including indie developers.
Yeah, and it was interesting that they actually showed a video montage of all these people, higher ups from big studios, saying they actually reached out to us and they wanted to know our input before they started making this thing, and what are you looking for? So that's actually a very smart, calculated move from Sony to make this thing better for... Because if it's better for developers, it's better for us as gamers. And so it kind of trickles down. They also did talk about, before getting to the actual games that will be made for this, they talked about some of the benefits. One of the big ones they were pushing was that they're going to try to save you as much time as possible. And they said, hey, you know, on the current system, when you're done a game, you have to turn the game off, then you got to power down the console, and then you got to start all over again. But this time, Mark Kearney of Sony said that's not going to happen.
The minutes that it takes today to boot a console and load a saved game will be a thing of the past. On PS4, you'll just hit that power button again and promptly be back playing the game at the exact spot you left off.
To me, that's a pretty good benefit.
It
I
is.
Like that.
Yeah. I assume they're able to do this through Gaikai, through their new cloud system. Because right now, I mean, I try to download an update for my game, and sometimes that takes 1,000 years. So I'm a little skeptical that this is going to happen the way that they're going to say that it happens.
Yeah, and the second part of that is, on the PS3, when you download an update, those very forceful, long, slow updates, you can't actually play a game. And the beauty of this is not just the PlayStation Cloud, which Gaikai is an integral part of, but the console itself. Like, two of their key pillars were immediacy and personalization. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that the console will learn what you like, and you can go to the PlayStation Store and try out any game, the full version of the game, before it even comes out through Gaikai, and you can play it right away because it downloads that very first bit for you, assuming it knows you want to play it, and if you keep playing it, it'll keep downloading in the background. So there's no wait. And Moment, like you were saying, when you first turn on the console, it immediately returns to that save state you were at before, and you jump right back in. There's no load times, no install waits, no nothing. You never have to wait for anything.
Yeah, and those were two huge things for me, because it's a lot like if you have a Nintendo DS, all you do is you shut the lid, and then when you flip it open, you just start from where you left off. So that technology is there in that sense, and I love that it comes to major tabletop consoles that you can do that, because that's huge. You know, I mean, a lot of times, especially when you only have, say, you know, half an hour to game or something, you want to get to it as fast as possible. And the PlayStation, especially in its early days, PlayStation 3 was notorious for being so slow and taking forever to start and forever to download. The downloading thing, where you can play as soon as you start downloading, is outstanding. Mm-hmm. And what I hearkened to, I was talking to somebody, and they're trying to get me to explain it. I said, well, it's like when you watch a YouTube video. You start watching it before all of it's loaded, and you can see bits of it as it go.
Yeah.
That's huge for me. That's awesome. Because the other thing that Sony's notorious for is taking for downloads and installs to take forever.
Yeah.
So if I can start playing it as I click the download button, that's huge for me. I think that's awesome. I love that. I love that idea. So the other thing they showed off was, obviously, we didn't see the actual console, but they did show off the controller, the DualShock controller, as expected, as we talked about last week. The little kind of pad on the top that's there is a touchpad.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to display anything, but it is some sort of biometric scanner and a touchpad at the same time. Yeah. And that controller features a few other things. It's got a built-in move sensor that changes color depending on what player you are, so you can always tell which controller is which player.
Called it.
Yeah.
Totally knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. I saw you tweet that. I was like, I called that last week.
Good call. And it's smart. It actually is smart, and it's very user-friendly. And they also have a headphone jack in the controller, which is nice. Mm-hmm. No more of this required Bluetooth third-party stuff, so that's another good thing.
And then they have the share button, which was one of the big things.
Yeah, so for me, actually, the most impressive thing I got from this whole conference, because the Gaikai thing I'm very skeptical about, because it depends on bandwidth and whether or not that is available when the console launches, which they hinted that it might not actually be that case. And same with the remote play, which we'll talk about in a sec. But the share button, I think, is the most revolutionary next-gen feature. And everyone talks about social gaming and pushing towards, you know, including Facebook and friends and this and that. But the share button is the greatest thing ever. Because for me, as a guy who plays a lot on the PC and on the consoles, there's a huge push towards live streaming events and video games and pro games, stuff like Twitch TV and Ustream, and then even YouTube. With Call of Duty, for example, you can live stream your play to YouTube. And that's a big thing. And people make careers out of monetizing their YouTube channels, their own little stories they tell, any sort of game they play. And what this share button does is anytime you're playing the game, you can hit the share button and instantly, in 100% real time, share footage of what you're doing with your friends online. You can save it, publish it online. You can multicast to Ustream. They announced Ustream as an official partner for this. Any gameplay, and you can pause it anytime. You can stop it and show your friend. And the coolest part, is if I'm showing you, let's say we're playing whatever game, a new Little Big Planet down the road, and I'm stuck on a boss. I can go, Moment, look at this. Stop it, show you. You can watch what I'm doing live. I can stop, pause it at any moment. You can take over my controller remotely and help finish that boss for me.
I think that's amazing. Seriously amazing.
Yeah, that'll help huge because there's no secret that some of us are better at certain types of games than some of us aren't. And I for one, am not, you know, first-person shooters, not my forte. And sometimes when I got to boss levels, it kills me. So if I can pause it and say, hey, Rob, how would you like to spend 15 minutes helping me beat this guy here? It would be amazing. I'm going to go get a sandwich. You beat this guy.
Yeah, it totally reminds me of like when I was younger and we would game with friends and I'd get so frustrated at one part, I'd just like turn to my buddy and say, can you just do this for me? Because just get past this and I will just thank you for it later. And they'd jump right through it and I'd be like, oh, thank God. All right, give me the controller back.
It reminds me of playing with my little nieces and nephews because they'd love to play and then they get to the one part and be like, Mama, can you finish this part for me? I'm like, oh, God, yeah, okay, I'll finish this part for you. And then of course, when you do it, it's like, yeah, I won. It's like, you won? I just spent 20 minutes trying to beat this guy. But I think that there's a lot of innovative stuff in there, like stuff that really appeals to the gamer that will make the gaming experience much better. And I think that's a good move on their part. And I think we talked about how they didn't show off the other stuff. I think it's good that they led with this foot. Because this is the people that are going to buy it, right? We are the people that are going to majority buy the PlayStation 4. The people who want it for the other stuff, they're not as big a piece of the pie. So it was good for them to kind of lead with this foot and say, here, this is why you're going to want this. This is why you're going to be interested. And then we'll tell you about the rest of the stuff later when it's at E3 or Gamescom or whatever, which I think was great.
And back to the streaming thing, that's a twofold thing that I think investors and people in the industry don't really understand yet. But for Sony, it's genius, not just as a social user-friendly feature, but the viral marketing that will come from this, it is how this thing works is it's always on in the background compressing your video as you play all the time. So if you ever have that epic kill in Call of Duty or you do that the amazing, you know, car pass in the next NASCAR game.
Or a goal in like NHL or something.
Anything. Mm-hmm. Or any epic event or you create something in like Minecraft or something, if ever it comes to that, you can just share that online and it can go viral and through Facebook or whatever and everyone's going to see that and it's going to help the games.
It would have been like when we were playing multiplayer Far Cry and I shot Brian in the head. I would have posted that and sent it to everybody.
Exactly.
Look at me. I shot Calhoun.
That's the specs of the PlayStation 4. When we come back from break, we're going to talk about all the games and that they showed off that they're making and there's some good stuff coming. That's all still to come on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you? In the game.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Moment Qureshi here, joined by Christine Chubb. Brian Calhoun will be along next segment. For now, we're rejoined by Rob Keyes, the editor-in-chief of GameRant.com. He was in New York this week for the Sony PlayStation 4 reveal. We talked about the specs of the system in our first segment. Now we're going to get down to, along with showing off what it can do, they showed off, hey, this is what we're making. And there was a lot of good stuff they showed off. A lot of the big mm-hmm. developers came out and said, we've known about this since as early as 2008. And this is what we're working on. Before we run down the list, is there any one that kind of stood out to you guys where you said, this looks awesome?
Well, first I have to say that once again, we were right. Watch Dogs.
Of course.
Yeah.
Is obviously going to be for the new console.
Yeah.
I don't think I was expecting a new Killzone. But I thought it looked really cool. It was funny as I was watching the streaming event, and I was reading through Twitter, and a few people were talking about it. And they were showing the demo, he's walking along, and some guy's like, "Wow, look at him walk in the next gen!" Because that's all it was seeing was just this dude walking down the stairs. It's like, ooh, that's exciting. But it looks cool, like the whole the background of it, everything, like the fact that there wasn't really that kind of fade that can exist in games where in the background it's not as clear. Like, it just seemed like all-around clarity, which yeah. I thought was really showing off what this game's going to look like.
I loved Killzone 3. I was a big fan of Killzone 3, so I was really happy to see that they're coming out. And I wasn't as surprised because that's a staple Sony mm-hmm. exclusive franchise. Yeah. So, I mean, I thought if they were going to show something off, they'd show that off, and it looked great. I mean, it looked really good, and I'm glad they showed gameplay footage because some of the stuff they showed off was clearly just kind of trailer footage or whatever. So it was cool to see actual gameplay footage so we could see what they're doing, which was neat.
Yeah, and a lot of these preview events, you always kind of worry what's pre-rendered and what's actual mm-hmm. gameplay. And there was a guy on stage actually playing this game for us, and being there and seeing it in the proper resolution and the proper frame rate, it was mind-blowingly mm-hmm. beautiful. And not just like the extended color palette, because Killzone 1 and 2 were very gray and dull, and Killzone 3 was a very beautiful-looking game, but it still had some of those same visual issues. But this one was mind-blowing. As a guy who plays Battlefield 3 max graphics on the PC, this was very, very impressive, and I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, I spoke to Mike Gianni of City News, who went down there, and I was talking to him on the night of the launch, and he said the one thing that I want to impress upon people is that if you watched it streamed on the internet, you don't have any idea how good this thing actually looks, because you have to see it face to face in person.
Mm-hmm.
As he was talking about, like the photo quality, it looks like it's like rendering photos into a game, particularly in the. And the driving game, what was it called? It's called
Drive Club.
Yeah, he said it looks just spectacular. And he goes, give it a chance to see it face to face before you really start judging it, because it looks incredible.
Yeah, if it runs as smoothly as we want it to, and it actually like is fully rendered first person, mm-hmm. you know, get in the car, drive, look around, see other people, then it is going to be something special for sure.
I asked Calhoun about the driving game, and because you know that's his
wheelhouse. Of course, yeah.
But in typical Calhoun fashion, he seemed underwhelmed and just said they didn't really show off much, so I can't really judge it. So I was like, okay, whatever. To go, Brian.
Well, because when it comes to Brian doesn't have the best television either. So
yeah,
that's
right.
Quality of gameplay.
Oh yeah,
he still has the.
He plays in SD. He doesn't even know the difference.
One of these days, Brian is going to get an HDTV and plug in a PS2 and be like, "My God,
where have I been for the last 20 years?
This is incredible, Brian. That's a PlayStation 2." Oh,
whoops.
you mentioned Watch Dogs, Christine, and. This is the first time we got to look again at gameplay footage of that, because mm-hmm. we had seen the trailer from E3 and it was winning all these awards at E3 for, oh my God, this is the best game that's coming. But the gameplay footage, just like, I don't want to wait until November or December or whenever that is, the launch window of when it comes out. I want it now.
It
I don't want to
really
wait
because
it looks so good. The storyline looks good, and the gameplay footage looks good, and the sort of the idea of the whole controlling the internet and all that, and when I saw them actually playing it, I was like, yep, this is a game that's like right in my wheelhouse. This is what I want.
Yeah, it's like mixing cyberpunk with what we love about the Grand Theft Auto games, yeah. with a lot of Assassin's Creed elements. It's definitely something special, something new and unique as an IP. Like, I think it's going to be like a big, big launch title for the next gen.
Yeah. I agree. And I think it's great that they've pretty much said that it's coming out. When this thing comes out, it'll be ready to come out.
Yeah.
If not on the actual launch day, then in the launch window.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, an interesting point, because I think what they showed off with all these games is a lesson that they clearly learned from the PS3, because one of the biggest knocks against the PS3 was that when it came out, there was nothing out. There was no games. It's like, great, I have this console, but there's no games to play on it, or nothing good. So it looks like they're kind of working on shaping a good launch window of games for this thing.
I think, though, especially because they've come out and said it's not going to be backwards compatible, they have to have something for people to play.
Of course.
I mean, especially, there are so many good games coming out this summer and leading up to this console launch that you have to be able to think, okay, people aren't going to be able to play this, and they need to have a reason to buy this machine. So things like Watch Dogs would definitely be a reason to buy this console.
Sure. Yeah, I think there's going to be a good year of overlap where all the major AAA games, we can expect to see them available both in the PS3 and PS4 at mm-hmm. the same time.
I wonder if this is going to hurt the sales of the other consoles, because we know that Microsoft is coming up. They're going to announce whatever it is, it's a 720 or some other name.
Mm-hmm.
And then it could potentially hurt the sales of PS3 or Xbox 360 or Wii U games because people are going to start saving their money for this. Because, you know, mm-hmm. there's kids everywhere. There's adults everywhere who are now literally saving nickels and dimes and quarters to save up the money to get the thing. Now, we don't know price point. That's the one big thing that they didn't give us. There was speculation that it could be $428, $528, that kind of stuff. But we don't know how much it's going to cost. But people are saving their money already because they want this.
So, like you said, that's rumored... The rumor price point before the event was that there's going to be two SKUs available, one for $430, one for $530. And we don't know if that $431 is because it's going to be digital only or if it's mm-hmm. a different hard drive size. But the other thing is we also don't know the subscription plans for all these new services, mm-hmm. which could be a big thing. And the rumor is for the next Xbox, you may buy it like you buy a phone, and it's a cheaper hardware, but you may sign into like a two-year service agreement for something like Xbox Gold. Because they're testing that right now mm-hmm. with the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. You can buy it for really, really cheap, but you have to sign on for a two-year thing with Xbox Live Gold. And that would be a way cheaper entrance fee to get into that, to bring in new consumers for what they presume or looks like a better deal at first.
That's a really interesting concept. And, you know, I'm not so sure I would like that idea, but I like that they're trying to think of different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to find a different way to go around about it. Some of the other games that I showed off, you're a PC gamer, Diablo 3 is coming to the PlayStation 3.
Yeah, so that's been rumored in development for a very long time. And I thought it was...
PlayStation 4, I said PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
PlayStation 4.
Wait, it's coming
it's
to
coming
both.
It's coming to both,
yeah. That's right.
Exclusive to... the PlayStation brand is exclusive too. So PS3 and PS4. That's a big thing because Diablo is, despite its launch issues and you know criticisms, it was a highly rated game and it's the best-selling PC game of all time. Mm-hmm. So no matter what, that's going to bring in a lot of people, especially if it supports four-player co-op, couch co-op, and all these great things. I think that's going to be a big hit for PS4. I'm very impressed that with Activision... wheeling and dealing with Microsoft for the Call of Duty franchise, that they were able to come out not only with Diablo, but with Destiny,
mm-hmm.
which was a big thing.
That was the big thing. The one of the sort of big moments that kind of wowed people was when they put up the Bungie name, which has, up until now, been exclusively an Xbox thing, because obviously they made the Halo franchise and stuff. But now that they've left that behind, now they're partnering with Activision. They're making a game for Sony, which people were like, what is happening?
Yeah.
What is this? So that was big, and this Destiny thing looks pretty sweet.
And it's coming with exclusive content to the PlayStation console, which I thought was also interesting. But yeah, that is like the next gen shooter. That thing can kill Halo. Like they're gonna kill their own game that they made and passed off.
Hey, 343, you can have that old stuff that we had, or we're gonna smash you to bits with this new thing we're doing.
I thought it was funny too, because I was walking by one of the video game stores down the street, and the second after the trailer for Destiny launched the other week, they had the box out, and they were like, pre-order it now. And I was like, well, what if you pre-order it for what system would you pre-order it for? You're like, maybe I'll be getting it for the PlayStation thingy, but, you know, because at the time we didn't know where it was coming to. Right. So it's like, I'll just pre-order it generically. I'd like to get this someday.
I'd like this for the PlayStation 3 or 4. I don't know. I would just like one for the PlayStation, and I will decide when the moment arrives. I don't know. A couple of things we haven't talked about. Infamous Second Son. They showed that off. Clearly, they're trying to, I don't know, I want to say reboot, but it looks like they're taking what they've done well in Infamous, but just going in a kind of a different direction. But I liked what they showed.
Yeah, it was similar to Killzone. They dropped the number, so it's not Infamous 4 or whatever it's supposed to be. It's just like, here's Infamous, the new next-gen relaunch, so to speak. You know, I'm not an Infamous guy. I think, for me, that was, of the first-party titles, one of the lesser appealing ones. Mm. I guess by showing Killzone before that, they kind of ruined. They really did, though, because Killzone was like, wow, that looks amazing, and they're like adding a couple new features, but this didn't really do it for me of the launch lineup.
I thought it looked all right. I mean, I like the Infamous series, and I also like the fact that they're dropping the numbers, because, I mean, the numbers would just eventually get ridiculous. So.
Yeah.
And it's a new console, you know, a whole new system to name things. It looks cool. I mean, I'd like to have seen more of it, mm-hmm. but, you know, it wasn't bad.
Well, speaking of a franchise that has ridiculous numbers, a new Final Fantasy is coming to PlayStation
seriously.
4.
Yeah.
And what is it, 13's coming out now soon?
Well, I think In the realm of Final Fantasy, they're relaunching Final Fantasy 14, the MMO,
right.
With a rename, and it's going free to play. But they teased an upcoming announcement. They're saying, stay tuned to E3 2013, and we're going to have a brand new Final Fantasy for PS4, but that's all we got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So nothing really special there yet.
Final Fantasy 87 coming to the PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. Then they also showed off, you know what? This was the first game they showed off, and it's an exclusive to PlayStation, and it's called Knack. I actually thought it kind of looked interesting.
Yeah.
I thought it looked kind of cool.
I thought of all the games that you could possibly show off right away, this was the one that you picked.
Yeah,
this one was an interesting choice. And when I say interesting, I mean weird.
Yeah, that I'll agree with. That I'll agree with, because they came out of the gate and they're like, okay, here's what we're making. And then they showed off this kind of cartoony.
He's like, by the way, here's my project. Let's look at this. Well, it's for me.
Frankly, it's got a cartoony feel and it looks kind of Wii-ish a little bit. But with better graphics, obviously. But I like the idea and the concept of the game, and it looks kind of cool with this character named Knack, who is a robot and can disintegrate and turn into small and to liquid and parts, and it was kind of cool.
I give them props for showing a new IP right off the bat. It was a very strange start. I really thought they were going to start with something like high visuals. There's something familiar but new. So this was a strange start. But and the guy, I forget his name, who was on stage announcing it, kept like hyping it up. Says, I've been waiting to show you this for years. But to its credit, like being there and seeing that, it actually looked like a DreamWorks movie that you were playing.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be a very appealing title if they can get a market behind it. I thought it looked cool.
Definitely one of my favorite moments of the entire thing was David Cage of Quantic Dream, who made Heavy Rain, and they're making Beyond, and is known to be a little smug, came out, and they didn't show off a game. They just showed off kind of what you can do with the technology, and they showed this like visually stunning, amazingly rendered face of this kind of old man with long white hair and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to play you a clip of what he said, and this just, it cracked me up when I heard it.
We can concentrate on what amazing stories we want to tell and what incredible worlds we want to create. We can take you to places you have never been before and make you feel emotions you have never felt in real life without having to wonder if we will have the horsepower to do so. We are now only limited by our imagination.
Take you places you've never been before and make you feel things you've never been able to feel.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, well, are you making video games, or are you a psychiatrist? What are you doing? But he clearly is very much in love with this technology. Yeah. And thinks he's going to change the not even the face of gaming. I think he feels like he's going to change the face of the world with this
replace
thing.
Replace our real lives with PS4.
That's right. It'll be like that thing in Star Trek where the Wesley had the game and he had attached
to
his eye.
I remember that.
With Ashley Judd.
And he felt
Robin.
Things you never felt before.
Oh, wow. Star Trek The Next Generation reference. Yeah. I like it. That's, I like it.
That's all right with me. But I thought that was pretty funny when David Cage comes out, and I only played 17 seconds of what was a much longer rant where he was talking about how they're going to revolutionize everything and change everything. And
I was surprised, though, that because he came out, that they didn't show anything from Beyond. Because,
yeah.
I mean, it was something that they'd shown during E3 last year, and then they haven't really talked about it since. And we've discussed whether or not it was going to be for the next gen, if it was coming up this summer. And then I thought, you know, maybe show a little bit of something, but nope.
Yeah, it was definitely under the radar, this Beyond thing. I think they're waiting for something big for that to happen, hopefully before E3. But I did like how they brought out multiple tech demos. It wasn't just that one, but like Capcom showed off that crazy fantasy thing, that unnamed game. What do they call it? Sampanto Ray was the technology behind it or something.
Yeah, that's right.
And then we also saw the Unreal Engine 4 in action in like real time, and that was like that.
That was a cool demo.
Right, and Unreal Engine 3 powers, it's like the most used engine in multi-platform titles, and the Unreal Engine 4 is going to be that for the next gen, I mean, supposedly. And the fact that it runs so smoothly and right out the gate for the PS4, I think that's going to be like the thing we talk about for the next 5 years.
So that's what we saw at the Sony PlayStation 4 announcement. We don't know how much it's going to cost. We don't know
what it looks like.
What it looks like, but we do know that it's due out holiday of this year. So that's October, November, December sometime.
Yeah, that's usually the American Thanksgiving weekend is usually considered
holiday.
Which
is a good time to, I mean, that's the gold mine, right? That's a good time. So we will definitely keep you posted with things to come. And of course, this crew here is planning to be at E3. Keys, of course, you're going to be there as well.
Yes, sir.
So we will see what happens. Still to come on Got Game, Brian Calhoun is going to magically appear, and he's going to help us review Crysis 3 and Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. That's all to come on Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. We've got game. Do you game play?
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Momin Qureshi, Rob Keys, and Christine Chubb still here around the table. Now, he wasn't here in segment one or segment two, but through the magic of pre-tape, Brian Calhoun has arrived for segment three.
Don't give our secrets away.
Well, I you know, on one hand, it's a radio secret, you're right, but on the other hand, I like to be forthcoming with our loyal Got Game listeners and tell them the honest truth.
Well, they are awesome, so I guess they do deserve the truth.
Now, you're here to do a couple of reviews for Crysis 3 and for Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, but before we get to that, since you weren't around for the big PS4 recap that we did in our first part of the show, what'd you think? There was a lot there, and I know you got a lot to say. What are your thoughts?
That's a great intro for what I'm about to say, because I really don't have a huge amount to say. A lot of people have contacted me on Twitter and said, hey, what do you think about the announcement of PlayStation 4? I'm sitting there going, well, they didn't talk price. They gave a release window. They didn't talk about, you know, what sort of medium they'll be using, mm-hmm. DVDs, Blu-rays. I'm guessing Blu-rays, mm-hmm. but they didn't talk about that.
Right.
A lot of questions not answered. Now, they did give us a lot of cool things, like the Gaikai, as I said about five times in the show already.
Sure, we predicted it, yeah.
Will be part of the system,
mm-hmm.
and it sounds really cool, the idea that, hey, Momin, you got, let's say, Crisis 4 in a couple of years when it comes out, and you bought it on day one, and you're playing it, and I'm sitting there at my place, not willing to invest my money just yet, wondering, would I enjoy this game, and I can just go into the store and grab the game you bought and start streaming it right there and play a trial version of the full game right away. That's really cool. The fact that a big focus of this system will be that you won't have to wait around for stuff to happen. For like example, like a movie, you can download a movie and get, say, the first 15 seconds in there, and it'll start playing that movie, and I'll download the rest of it in the background, just sort of filter it into your gaming console, like YouTube or whatever else happens out there.
Yeah, so it's much like a YouTube video where you can start watching it before all of it's loaded.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so that's really cool. There's been a lot of complaints about the PlayStation 3 about just how their architecture is set up,
mm-hmm.
and how you always have to put so much effort into just updating it over and over and over again, and it seems like more of a waiting game. Like, you get the newest PlayStation 3 game and you want to play it, but you have to patch your console for half an hour before you can start playing it. So there's a lot of focus to get around that part of what has become sort of a problem for PlayStation. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about that.
All right. Well, there you go. That's Brian Calhoun's thoughts on the announcement. I shouldn't say the reveal. The announcement of the PlayStation 4. You know what else they didn't show us? The actual PlayStation 4. That's the big thing that people are saying.
Well,
you know what? The thing is, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
And the only thing that would really make it matter, and I said this a little earlier in the show, is that if it turns out to be like a massive, like, cinder block style thing, and it's huge, and it will take up a ton of room on your... That's the only way it would matter. But it's not going to be that big. It's not going to be that big.
But in the end, what does it matter?
It doesn't.
It's just going to be the casing. The important parts were they're going to have 8 gigs of RAM.
Yep.
That's huge. That'll make that machine really fast. I mean, this isn't like storage space. This is memory. This is thinking capability.
Yeah.
And I think the current console has like 0.5 gig. I could be wrong on that, but it's not very much. So that's going to be massive. So this thing's going to be a lot quicker than the current consoles out on the market. So what does it matter what the plastic on the outside is?
It doesn't. You know what does matter is what your thoughts were on Crysis 3 and Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. And since you're doing the reviews, Calhoun, I'll let you pick where you want to start.
Well, let's start with Metal Gear Solid.
Let's start with Metal Gear Solid Revengeance.
Rising Revengeance.
Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
There you go. What
I look
a
forward
tough
to the
title
next Metal
say.
Gear game so they can make it even more complicated.
Yes. Put another R in there. Let's keep this R thing going.
Let's talk about this game where destructibility is the big thing, where you can destroy everything you can get your hands and feet on.
I'll get to that in a second. You play as Raiden in this game, as you know, not Solid Snake, not Big Boss, not any of those guys or clones or whoever is that bloodline now. You play as Raiden, the ninja guy who's always had lighter hair. In this game, it's kind of a white hair sort of thing that has going on. And, you know, this game has been shown before, E3 demos, stuff like that, trailers, where pretty much the cutting mechanic is the game. And I'm actually surprised to say that it, at least for me, it wasn't the entire game. Now, Raiden is a gun for hire protecting an African prime minister in this country that was recently war torn, and he was able to, or like this government was able to bring about peace. And so Raiden is protecting the head of the state in order to keep the peace, fails at his job. Guy gets sniped a little bit, as many people do in this game. So Raiden goes on this grand adventure of revenge to bring down this evil group that's trying to cause another war, because that's what these games are all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Metal Gear game. It's about war. And that's what it is. There's a lot of people walking around battlefields philosophizing about war and battle. And it wasn't made by Kojima. This is a Platinum's Game game. You know, the guys who made Bayonetta. Guys who made...
Definitely can see some similarities there between this and Bayonetta. It's got a similar feel.
Vanquish is the game I was trying to think of just a second ago. But despite the action focus, there is still a lot of that. Here's this guy, he's going to talk about war for like 3 minutes, which I don't want to ruin it, but the end boss goes on the longest rant, and the end boss is just insane when you finally get to him and realize what he is, it's just amazing. I'm not going to ruin it.
Oh,
something to be experienced.
Good insanity. That's good. I like that.
It's insane insanity. It's really bad insanity. But as someone who's playing the game, you sit there and you go, I could never have guessed this. I would never guess this in a million years.
I love that. I love when you get to the end and it's something that kind of surprises you.
It is a big surprise.
In a good way.
So, game is not, like I said before, all about cutting. So, quickly, let's get to what's the not cutting part. The not cutting part is basically Raiden as a character sort of progressing and changing a little bit throughout the game. And this game got a little deeper than I thought it was going to be. All these Metal Gear games are about talking about war and being very poetic about it. But I've never really thought that they've really talked about the evils of it and how it can hurt people a lot. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance does sort of touch on those topics.
Hmm.
And while it does start about trying to keep the peace and get rid of these guys who are trying to cause this war, the game halfway through flips and it turns about, you know, here's the horrible things that happen to people because of war and sort of how it affects different people. And then other than that, it's a lot of cutting. It's a lot of slicing things apart. Not everything, though. Surprisingly, there are some things, for, like just random things, boxes, stuff like that, pillars, stuff you think you should cut apart, you can't. But the majority of it, all the bad guys you're facing, you have an energy system that'll tell you sort of when you can just sort of unlock that. I'm going to slice through everything no matter what capability. Because, I mean, you can swing your sword no matter what. But not every time you're going to cut through a guy and slice him in two. But there is sort of this energy meter, and when you fill it up, you can do that. And the lower guys, basically the fodder, at any point, you can activate that power, cut them in two. There you go. The bigger guys, you have to work on them a little bit, weaken them down a little bit, and then you can cut those guys in two. So actually, I kind of liked my time with Metal Gear Solid Rising Revengeance. It's a pretty good game. It's confusing as all heck, but it's a Metal Gear game. I mean, try and figure out
before you know what you're getting.
Yeah, try and figure out the plot of a Metal Gear Solid game or a Metal Gear Rising game in this case. You know, I said it's a lot about, you know, talking about war, being poetical about war. But it's also a lot of not understanding what anyone's really talking about.
I got to tell you the truth. When I tried, when we demoed it at E3 last year, I didn't care what the plot was. It seemed like so much fun and so on such an absurd, ridiculous level that I was like, I just want to play this and walk around and cut stuff and fight people.
Yeah, there's going to be parts where that's just going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's the best parts of the game, just being able to do that.
Yeah.
There's going to be parts where you can't help but, you know, sit there and watch a cutscene. It doesn't help that short. You know, the game is about 5 or so hours long. And a lot of it's talking. Let's say 4.5 to 4 hours is actual gameplay. You have about an hour of cutscenes to about half an hour of cutscenes somewhere in that area. That's what you get roughly. So there is, you know, for the game this long, that is a lot of just sitting there watching people talk. But overall, I liked it. It's a little short. It's not going to be for everybody. And the blocking system, you have to manually block. There's not any blocking button. You actually have to parry. So you have to use a light attack to knock away their attack, which is kind of cool. Really hard, though. So if you're going to get this game like me, start on easy. I started the game on medium, couldn't do it, had to restart, start on easy. By the time I finished on easy, I came back on medium again. I could actually do it. So that would be my suggestion. So 8 out of 10, a little short, like I said, 5 or so hours, but I enjoyed it.
All right, that's Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. What about Crisis 3?
Crisis 3, I did not like as much. Now, I should start off by saying, wonderful game in sense of game mechanics, in sense of user interface, how it's put together, all that stuff, really good. Crisis 3, though, is just, well, you like to think of a video game as a step forward, right? Crisis 3 is a step to the left, or to the right, of Crisis 2. Not really progression, just more of the same. And I kind of had a problem with that, especially considering how much Crisis has been pushed. Like, the entire series has always been about pushing the boundaries. I mean, remember the original Crisis when it came out, the very first one on PCs. It was made at a time where the majority of PCs on the market could not play it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was deliberately made that way because I guess the developers wanted to make a statement about computer graphics and, you know, sort of their programming skills. And it's not a bad game. But it pushed the genre forward. And Crisis 2, not as much, but did add a few things to the genre and push it forward. Crisis 3, though, doesn't really push anything forward. In fact, in multiplayer, there are maps that I've already played.
Hmm.
So I guess it's like, oh, here's a great map from the last game. It's a rooftop map with like greenhouses and stuff on it. And no, I've already played that one before. Played in Crisis 2. Wasn't really a big fan of that idea, especially considering how much of the rest of the game does feel like previous Crisis games. So, like, Crysis 2, if you remember, was a lot of walking around. You had two abilities mapped to sort of your shoulder buttons. You could hit one and you get a cloak for a limited amount of time. You can hit the other, you get an overshield, so you can soak up a little bit more damage for a limited time. And that's what happens to Crysis 3. One of the characters from the original Crysis, who missed the second game, comes back, lets you out at the beginning of the game, and then you spend the entire game walking around the city as Prophet, the main character of the franchise. Now he's the main character of the franchise. You're back in New York City, and you're fighting aliens and the evil Cell Corporation at the same time to try and take back your planet. That's the elevator pitch of Crysis 3, and I just wish there was a little bit more. Now, not to say that this is a bad game. Good story. You know, it's a pretty decent story for what you get. Great characters, great acting. I mean, just the way that they sort of animate these guys looks unbelievable. Graphically speaking, in the sense of putting raw data against raw data from Crysis 2, not a graphical update. I feel like the environments feel a little bit more fleshed out in terms of sort of the placement of different aspects of like trees, building, stuff like that. That looks a little better. The graphic level itself, though, not a huge change. And I should say that I've been playing on the Xbox 360 for Crysis 3. I would love to see it on the computer, but I don't have a computer that can play it, so I had to do the Xbox 360 version. So I was a little upset about that, but
Overall,
it's actually a pretty good game. The enemy AIs will react to you, not just sort of what's happening in the environment, but if you pick one off, they'll sort of react to it really quickly. And then they sort of get afraid if you pick off a couple more really quickly. So I was really impressed by that. And the controls are great. You still have that one button you can press on your controller, sort of the backspace button, to bring up your sort of weapon on your hand and do customizations really quickly, change ammo, change sort of put a red dot sight on it, put a silencer on it, like on the fly. So overall, you know, there are a few bad things. The vehicle controls are terrible. Did not like them at all. None of the vehicles control good. And they did just not change enough of this game for me. You know, some of the big additions are like, oh, well, we took the daily challenge thing from those Halo multiplayer games, or we took this thing from Activision. Everyone takes from Call of Duty. It's the just sort of the way that first person shooters are made these days. Everybody takes from Activision. Just wish there was a little bit more originality in Crysis 3. You know, the coolest thing I saw as far as original aspects in this game is
what's that?
In multiplayer, at the very end of every game, you get a highlight reel of sort of your best moments in the game. That's kind of cool. Other than that, it's more walking around. Not necessarily a bad thing, but for a franchise that's been so much about changing what a shooter is supposed to look like and sort of how it's supposed to play. Like I said, Crysis 3 is not a step forward. It's just a step to the right or the left. So I'm giving it a 7.5 out of 10.
7.5 for Crysis 3 Metal Gear Rising Revengeance gets an 8 out of 10, both from Brian Calhoun. That's about it for this week's show. So for Brian Calhoun, who stopped in for segment 3, and for Christine Chubb and Rob Handsome Robot Keys, who stopped in to help us out this week, I'm Omen Qureshi. This has been Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.